And in each case, it's the smallest amount of supersymmetry. So the number of supersymmetries, the number of spinners in the supersymmetry algebra. There is spin representation here, which is two-dimensional. Here we have S plus S minus, four-dimensional. Here we have two copies of S plus, eight-dimensional. And here we have S plus, which is 16-dimensional. So obviously we find the powers of two. So in each case, the field content is a connection A and a section psi of the spin bundle tensor, the adjoint representation of the Lie algebra, where S is whichever spin representation appears there. And then the action is just the integral of the usual Liang-Mills action for the connection, and the usual quadratic. The usual action for a fermion involving the Dirac operator coupled to the connection. Okay, and finally, the supersymmetry. So in each case, if I take a spinner, so it gives a symmetry of the fields. Which sends, it's an infinitesimal symmetry. A plus epsilon cubed psi. Here I'm using the gamma matrices, which turn two spinners into a vector, which I think of as a connection. Then psi plus epsilon fa dot cubed. And here the curvature is a two-form, so I can Clifford multiply that two-form by this spinner. Okay, so supersymmetric field theories in lower dimensions are typically deduced, built from these ones by compactifying and adding on scalars. Okay, any questions about this stuff? Okay, so what we're going to be interested in today is twisting. So this was an idea introduced by Witten. So I'll explain what Witten said, but we'll mostly be doing it in a slightly different way. So suppose we have a supersymmetric field theory in dimension D, and we're in a situation where the Orr symmetric group gives a non-trivial Orr symmetry group. So to twist the theory, we need to use some algebraic data. So let's choose the following two pieces of data: a homomorphism from the spin group to the Orr symmetry group. And secondly, Well, the spin group and the Orr symmetry group act on the supertranslation algebra. Q in the supertranslation algebra. And this data must satisfy two properties. This spinner squares to zero. And also, Q must be invariant under the twisted action of the spin group. So it's invariant under the copy under of spin D embedded by the identity times rho inside spin D times GR. So this algebra acts in the supersymmetry algebra, and we must ask that Q is invariant. Okay, so if we have such a data, then in this situation, well, if we have some supersymmetric field theory, it acquires, it has a symmetry, Q square zero, so we can take its Q cohomology. Has an odd symmetry Q squared equals zero. So we can take, well, roughly speaking, take cohomology or better. So that we can add Q, well, whatever field theory is, it's something which has a differential on it. It's the DG object called BRST differential. So we can add Q to the BRST differential. On, say, observables, local operators. Are the Hilbert space. So the result of doing this is the twisted theory. Okay, so the reason one does this is that everything simplifies greatly. Once you only consider observables which are Q invariant or the Q cohomology of observables, most observables disappear. You're only left with typically it's a very small number, and you can compute everything exactly in many situations. Okay, questions? And maybe. Yeah.
Maybe there's something to say about like a homological degree or like the ghost number we have.
Yeah, that's a good point. So what Dylan was pointing out is that although Q is an odd symmetry, well, we normally, when we take cohomology, we want a symmetry of cohomological degree one. That's not the case here. So what you have to do, what you have to do is use a copy of U1 inside your orthosymmetry group, under which Q is weight one, and use that copy of U1 to change the cohomological grading of everything. So I don't want to get into details like at this point too much. It's useful to know this point because there are some situations where your twisted field theory is not Z-graded. It might be Z-mod 2-graded or Z-mod 4-graded. And it's often the case that the failure of your twisted theory to be Z-graded can be seen by the physical theory having an anomaly in the orthosymmetry. Okay, so
am I right that it's GR had better be big enough, but you're not going to be able to find this row if GR is smaller.
Well, except in low dimensions when the spin group is not simple, like dimension four.
Then still GR has to be at least its representation,
the
smallest
representation,
is still
at 3 dimensions. Yeah. That's right. So typically, you're not going to be able to do this with n equals 1 supersymmetry in dimension 10, for example. So let's write down an example. In four dimensions with n equals 2 supersymmetry, this is the original example, written down by Witten in his paper from the late 80s. In this case, the supersymmetry algebra consists of usual translations. And then we take two copies of S plus, two copies of S minus. These transform in the fundamental and anti-fundamental representations of the orthosymmetry group, where the orthosymmetry group, well, this whole algebra is acted on by GL2, but we'll only consider the SL2 orthosymmetry group. And W is the fundamental representation. Now, spin 4 SL splits up as a copy of two copies of SL2, and S plus is the fundamental representation of SL2 plus, S minus is the fundamental representation of SL2 minus. So there are two obvious homomorphisms from here to here. We could take the identity on one of these factors and we could take the map to be the isomorphism on one of these factors and just the trivial map on the other factor. So we take rho SL2 plus to be an isomorphism from there to the orthosymmetry group. Okay, so once we do this, what people typically do when they consider twisting is they say, okay, I've chosen my row. Now, in the symmetries of my supersymmetry algebra, I have a new copy of spin 4. Instead of my original copy of spin 4, I'm going to take the graph of rho. So under the new action of spin 4, spin 4, which is the copy . So under this new action, W and W star both are copies of S plus. So we forgot about the Orr symmetry group, we just have a new action of spin 4, and now the supertranslation algebra looks like C4 plus pi S plus tensor S plus S minus tensor S plus. Now we see that there is an invariant element because there is an invariant element in here. SL2 acting on the tensor square of the fundamental representation is a unique invariant element. So up to scale exists unique spin 4 invariant odd element. Q in S plus tensor S plus. So now we have the data that Witten said we needed. We have a new action of the spin group and a spinner invariant under this new action. So we can now take Q cohomology, and our n equals 2 theory simplifies greatly. And what Witten showed is that if one starts off with pure n equals 2 theory, in this way, you end up with something which computes the Donaldson invariants. OK, so what I think I'd like to do, see, this was not my original plan, so it might go wrong. But I think what might be useful to do is to see really explicitly what happens to the fields of pure n equals 2 theory when we do this. Now, we're going to use what we already know about how to describe supersymmetric theories. We know how to describe the 1, 0 theory in dimension 6. Now, that is 8 supercharges. So if I reduce that theory to 4 dimensions, I'll get pure n equals 2 theory in 4 dimensions. So. This reduces to pure So in 6 dimensions, we know what the field content is, and then we can reduce it to figure out what it becomes over here. In 6 dimensions, we have a connection, which is a 1 form in, say, R6. Of course, everything will be adjoint valued, but I'll leave that out from the notation. And psi, which is a section of spin bundle tensor W, where W is a 2-dimensional symplectic vector space. And the Orr symmetry group is SL2 acting on W. OK, so to figure out what this becomes, let's start with this connection. The connection, well, the first 4 components just become a 4-dimensional connection. I mean, the connection becomes a four-dimensional connection, and then two scalars. Well, to figure out what the spinners become, all we need to do is to think about how does this four-dimensional spin representation of spin 6 decompose into representations of spin 4. What you find is that, well, we'll use the it's another very useful fact about spinners is that the six-dimensional spin representation in this case will decompose as a tensor product of a four and a two-dimensional representation. And that always happens. So, well, let's say a plus because this is the chiral spin representation. So S plus is S plus 4D tensor S plus 2D plus S minus 4D tensor S minus 2D. Okay, and again, this happens an even dimension, which is written as a sum of two other even dimensions, you have such a formula. So this tells us that the six-dimensional spinner six-dimensional spinner becomes chiral and anti-chiral. All right, so two chiral, two anti-chiral four-dimensional spinners. So this psi 6D becomes four-dimensional guy. It's a section on R4 of, well, what do we have? S plus 4D tensor S plus 2D tensor W plus S minus 4D tensor S minus 2D tensor W. Now we realize that there's something a little subtle going on. I think, anyway, let's see. If we think of what's the four-dimensional symmetries we have. We have spin 4. We also have the symmetries of this space W. And there's also an SO2 rotating the remaining two directions. So the full Ohr symmetry group is SL2 times U1. And writing these two-dimensional spinners indicates how these are charged under that U1. It's charge half, charge minus half. These guys transform in the vector representation of SL2. So as you can see, this part is not prepared, which is fine. But maybe it's good because it makes the pace correct. Okay, now we're going to twist, and I think the only thing we need to do is to say we're just going to forget about this two-dimensional SO2 symmetry, and use the homomorphism from spin 4 to the SL2 which rotates W. And then there's going to be something invariant here. Well, because these are not rotated by that SL2, they won't be affected. So I still will still have two scalars. Yes, I am. But keeping track of the way things transform under GL2 is a little subtle, right? Well.
You said one of them is a little
term,
the other one's
an answer. Yeah, but the two scalars. I was worried about the two scalars.
Okay, one of them is a
That's right. Well, that's right. And then the spinners are in the, yeah, it's true. Yeah, you said it much better. Okay, so to twist, we'll forget about the SO2, and we use rho from spin 4 to SL2 as before. So if we do this, then under the new action, what do we do? We forget about S plus's the two-dimensional stuff. So S2D plus or minus, these are just scalars. Whereas W becomes S plus. So that once we twist, under this new action, our fields look like R. Do it over here. We have a connection, two scalars. Scalars. And what have the spinners become? Well, so the W becomes S plus. The spinners are sections of S plus tensor S plus, plus S plus tensor S minus. So it's exactly the same as what happens up there, the supersymmetry algebra. So this, the spinners are like the odd elements. This will always be the case. That the spinners in field theory will be the odd elements of your supersymmetry algebra. But we can do it a little better, because these representations of spin 4 have other names. So S plus tensor S minus is equal to the vector representation, whereas S plus tensor S plus, this is wedge 2S plus plus sim 2S plus. So this is trivial. This is a three-dimensional irreducible representation, which you can think of as this self-dual two forms. So in sum, our spinners are no longer spinners. They're a vector, a scalar, and a self-dual two form. So psi becomes a vector, scalar, and a self-dual two-form.
How big was S plus 2D?
One-dimensional. So, okay. So I did this calculation to illustrate something that wouldn't. Yes. It violates Minn's statistics. Yes. It's not unitary, I suppose, right? That's a good point. So the reason for going through this is to illustrate something wouldn't want to explain. If we're just working on flat space, and we're just working on flat space, I can just choose any supercharge whose square is zero and use that to take Q cohomology. It doesn't need to be invariant under a copy of spin 4 or spin D. But if we want to work on a more general manifold, it's this Witten's procedure where you take this twisted copy of spin D. The utility of it is that it allows you to say, now we have a theory with a spin D action and a supercharge invariant under spin D, so that I can put this theory on any Riemannian manifold. Now, and if I put it on some other Riemannian manifold, what previously I had thought were spinners now are actually vectors or subtool 2 forms or things like that. So if one puts, this twisted version of the 4dn equals 2 theory on some Riemannian manifold, it is actually globally different than the original 4dn equals 2 theory, even if locally it looks the same. Just because, if I take an arbitrary Riemannian manifold, this bundle. What am I saying? Yeah. It's the same. No, back up. So to put an arbitrary Riemannian manifold, it's the same, but just I'll say it better. Okay, sorry, I'll just back up. So before twisting, if we put things on an arbitrary Riemannian manifold, this copy of S plus here was something called W. It lives in the representation of the Orr symmetry group. Twisting just means that W now comes from some non-trivial principal bundle for the Orr symmetry group. So the theory is different because what was previously in some trivial bundle is now in some non-trivial bundle associated to the prime bundle. Okay, any questions? Yes?
I would imagine that sort of the story about putting things on animals also has something to say about like actions and so on. Sometimes I know what to do with field content, I know what makes it seem field content, but the actual action I wanted was using something about when I was on Earth.
No, I'd worry about that too, but. Yeah, this point is addressed in Witten's paper. It's not obvious to me that the action of the n equals 2 theory makes sense in this way, but apparently it does. So. No, it's something more fundamental. It's basically the fact that you can couple the n equals 2 theory to supergravity, because here we're putting it in a specific supergravity background. One of the fields of supergravity is a connection for the Orr symmetry. And I'm turning on that field. So. But yeah, I agree it's not obvious. Apparently it can be done and is discussed in Witten's paper. So I'd like to do another example. But lots of the examples I like to study are not invariant under this spin group. So if one doesn't worry so much, if you're not a physicist, I'm not a physicist. I don't so much care. I don't see why the Lorentz group is the thing I should be obsessed by. Now, what are the symmetries of a supersymmetric field theory? It's a product of the Lorentz group and the orosymmetry group. So that means a supersymmetric field theory is not something I can put on just a manifold. It's something I can put on a manifold which has, in addition, a principal bundle for the orosymmetry group. So in general, a CZ theory with orosymmetry G sub or can be put on a Riemannian manifold with a principal G or bundle with connection. Okay. Twisting is just choosing a particular such thing. So if we choose rho then we can choose the principal bundle with connection to be the one associated to the frame bundle. To be just the associated to the frame bundle. And this is all Witten's twisting is. It's just if you think about something, what's a more general thing you can do? Yeah?
What you mean there in the second part is that you pick a spin structure and a homomorphism and that induces a GR bundle?
Yes, well, I suppose, yes, my mistake. I should have said a Riemannian spin manifold.
Okay.
Yes.
So it picks one structure
else. Yeah, because just to define the notion of spinner, we need that. Which is, so to define it, you're always going to have a spinner field, so you always need to have a spin manifold. Yeah, so a more general thing is, suppose we had if we had some subgroup, say H, then suppose H preserves a spinner Q, a supersymmetry of square zero. Well, then we can just do the same kind of thing. We can say we can put it on a manifold where, you know, the spin D times GR bundle has been reduced to H. Then, so on a manifold with a principal G sub or bundle, where the spin D times the GR bundle is reduced to H. Well, we can put our supersymmetric theory and it will have a supercharge. So, there's some very simple things you can do. So I'm going to think about twisting 40 n equals 1. And this will be something you can do on a manifold of SU2 homonomy. Take 40 n equals 1. Well, the supersymmetries is just S plus plus S minus. If we choose some Q in S plus, Q is fixed by SL2 minus. So on a Riemannian manifold, whose holonomy lives in here, I have a supercharge square root of 0. Manifold of SU2 minus holonomy. There exists a supercharge. I feel like I've been saying lots of trivial things and getting a bit tied up in knots. But so then we can twist. So this kind of thing where it's invariant under SUN instead of SO2N or spin2N, it's typically it's a holomorphic twist instead of being topological. So I'd like to calculate what this holomorphic twist of 40 n equals 1 theory is. Just as a good example. So, what do we mean by this? So, it's often the case that the twisted theory has a much simpler description than the original theory with fewer fields, because the supersymmetry makes some fields cancel out with each other. And what we'll find is that the answer is that if X has SU2 holonomy, so it's a complex surface, holomorphic symplectic, the theory is equivalent to something called holomorphic BF theory. Holomorphic BF theory, the fields consist of a 0, 1, it's not a full connection, it's just the 0, 1 part of a connection, which will describe some holomorphic bundle, and B, which is a 2, 0 form, and the action is the integral of B wedge F02A. Okay, so the B is just a Legrand multiplier field imposing the condition that F02 vanishes. F02 vanishes means that A describes a holomorphic bundle. Okay, questions? Theo, yes? I know.
And then the kissing sort of just erased. some calculation comes in. It didn't do the cancellations.
No, it didn't do the calculation. That one is a little tricky because it looks like all the fields cancel. What that really means is that the field space becomes a kind of a RAM stack. That's why I didn't want to go into that example because of that kind of thing, and it gets too subtle.
Are you going to tell us why things cancel?
Yes. Yes.
But I don't have any
questions yet. Okay. So how do we do this? Well, remember the supersymmetry action. Was of this form. In particular, the way psi varies involves a derivative of A. Now, if you want things to cancel, you better not have any derivatives because, you know, that's not gonna make them cancel exactly. So what we can do is we can rewrite the n equals 1 gauge theory in first order in such a way that the action of supersymmetry has no derivatives. So the original action, well, let's introduce a field B, which is a self-dual 2 form, and so that the action is so the fields are we have the spinner we had before, the connection we had before, but introduce a new field B. And because B has this term here, this B wedge B term, this is what physicists would call it's an auxiliary field. We can do the change of coordinates. B goes to B plus half of FA plus. And if we do this, the action becomes the integral of, you know, we're completing the square . So if we do this change of coordinates, then we've rewritten the action in such a way that the field B does not mix with the other terms at all. It just appears as B wedge B. And this term here is up to a topological term, FA plus wedge FA plus is the same as FA F wedge star F. This is, I'll ignore the topological term. So this is the original action plus this B wedge B term, and that just does nothing. Now. So the equations of motion are that B equals 0, and we can remove B. So this form is equivalent to the original form. Now you can ask, what does the supersymmetry look like? With these fields, fraction of a supersymmetry in S plus is take AB psi plus psi minus goes to A plus gamma Q psi minus B psi plus plus epsilon B times Q psi minus. So this term is the same, and in the way the spinner changes, what we've done is replaced F by B. But that's fine because F is B. So the equations of motion tell us. Like F is F, or B is F plus. So this is kind of manifestly the same. And now there are no derivatives. And we can just cancel everything. So let's see. So because we're going to choose some element of S plus, and we're going to break the symmetry to SU2. Because we're breaking the symmetry to SU2, we can write things in the holomorphic language. So our forms might be PQ forms instead of just forms. So here's what the field content looks like. There's A, which is a 1-0 form and a 0-1 form, and B, which is, if you think about how to write self-dual two forms in the holomorphic language, it's a 2-0 form, a multiple of the Kähler form, and a 0-2 form. And the fermionic fields are psi minus, which is a 0-1 form, and psi plus, psi plus is in the trivial representation, so we can write it however we want to write it. I'll write it like this. I'll write it like the first two components of B. And the reason being, what does our supersymmetry do? Our supersymmetry maps that to that, that to that, and that to that. So things just manifestly cancel, and we're left with this field, these fields. And the actions. Okay. Any questions about that? That calculation?
How come there aren't any 1-1 forms? Any other 1-1 forms?
Right, because this is a self-dual two form, which has three components. And if you think of the decomposition of two forms into self-dual and anti-self-dual, the anti-self-dual ones are the orthogonal complement of the 1-1 forms. That's three-dimensional. Because there's four 1-1 forms. One of them is the Kähler form, and the other four, the orthogonal complement, is the anti-self-dual forms. And B is the self-dual forms. This is how they're described.
So these are the fields that are getting identified under the action of S.
S plus.
Plus?
Right.
S minus would have mixed in some different things, maybe, but...
Well, the action of... The action of S minus is not so nice in these coordinates.
Sure.
Because I've chosen B self-dual forms as the symmetric square of S plus. And the action of S plus is nice if I take B to be self-dual. The action of S minus is nice if B was anti-self-dual. Okay, so maybe, well, stop there. But if you're, you know, interested in this stuff, I think it would be... There are some fun exercises you can do. In the n equals 2 case, so we wrote down the field content. So you can calculate how does the supersymmetry when we, you know, this Donaldson, in the Donaldson-Witten twist of n equals 2 theory, for 40, n equals 4, reduced from 10 dimensionals, n equals 1, find the Kapustin-Witten CP1 of twists, and describe the fields. Once you've made this twist. You know, there's gonna be some homomorphism from the spin group to the Auer symmetry groups, and then you can find a P1 of supercharges, and you know, there'll be the six scalars will transform in a certain way, and they'll become a one form and two scalars, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. Stop.
Statement about what field cancellation means. Like in general, if you kind of twist the differential, maybe you'd expect the cohomology of the twisted thing to be a subquotient of the cohomology.
Uh-huh. Well, so the cancel, well, if it had derivatives, that would be bad, might not be so nice, because if you take the cohomology, you wouldn't end up with a well-behaved sheaf. It might not be a fine sheaf anymore. It might not look like sections of a bundle. So the kind of thing you want is that this guy is homotopy equivalent to the subsheaf. Because they cancel, I can write down a contracting homotopy going the other, just the same maps going the other way.
You say homotopy equivalent, you mean like
of sheaves of co-chain complexes.
Where the homotopies are just like open set by open set or something.
The homotopy is also a map of sheaves. And that's the kind of obvious one, inverse to these maps. Now, if there were derivatives in the differential, then that you wouldn't be able to do that because then you wouldn't the inverse would not be a map of sheaves anymore. The inverse would be some kind of nasty global thing. And then, well, these sheaves, after some shift, will have a Lie algebra structure, and you can perform a transfer of structure to get the, you know, yeah.